before we started, what did you guys think of Christian? Yeah. This young man speaks in lots of other countries. He's been doing that since he's 12 years old. His dad's a pastor. And I asked him, I said, hey, I go, how you doing? He goes, I'm really nervous. And I said, good, good. Because he cares about this community. I'm excited to see what he's going to do with our students. Well, one of the favorite stories that my wife and I, we tell over and over and over and over again, is the story of my daughter, Hallie. Hallie, I know you watch with your pod mates at Luther College. I didn't ask you for your permission to share this story, but here it is, all right? When, one of my favorite stories, sorry, I tell the story a lot. When she was two and a half, three years old, I can't really remember, she was in her big girl bed, being big girl, and one night in particular that we remember is we put her to bed, and like any good parent, we say, okay, it's time for bed, go to sleep, turn the light off, close the door. And about 5 minutes later, my wife and I are downstairs watching some show or whatever it was, and we hear the door open, and we hear the sound of little feet, and then coming down the stairs, and then we're looking, and she turns her head around the corner with her beautiful head of hair and this little beautiful face, and she's sitting there watching us, and I said, okay, we're going to do this again. Now, our oldest is 23 years old, and basically most of his life, when we asked him to do something, he would do it. Not all the time, but usually. And we told him when he was about the same age, you can't come down the stairs. What he would do is that he wouldn't come down the stairs. He would just lay at the top of the stairs and be falling asleep. So he complied with our wishes. What we didn't realize was that our oldest is not normal. Our youngest is normal. They do not comply with your wishes. And so I picked her up and I put her back in bed and I'm trying to be the best dad I can be, you know, patient and loving and don't raise my voice and everything's gonna be great. Hallie, I love you so much, but you gotta stay in bed. We're teaching you this lesson, stay in bed. And I go, are you gonna stay in bed? And she goes, yeah. I said, promise? And she said, yeah, I promise. Now, I didn't realize that a two-year-old or three-year-old didn't know what the word promise meant. A lot of us don't know what the word promise means, but close the door, turn the light off, and about 5-10 minutes later, same thing happens. And this happens over and over and over again. And finally, I'm trying so hard to be like, okay, we're gonna be all right. She's not doing this to hurt me. You know, she just wants to kind of be with us. And I sit her down, I lay her in bed. I said, okay, Hallie, this is the last time. I go, are you going to stay in bed? She pops her thumb out of her mouth and she goes, yes. I said, you promise? And she goes, I hope to. She actually said that. But when we make a promise, that's what we're trying to do, right? We hope to keep the promise. We hope that we're able to keep that promise. And in the scripture text today that Kathy read, first from Ruth and then from the Gospel of Mark, there are two different layers to promises. One is this amazing, beautiful promise that Ruth makes to Naomi. And the second is a promise that Jesus is calling his disciples and then us into. If you've been worshiping with us over the past year, you know we've gone through Genesis, through Deuteronomy, and now we're in the book of Ruth, one of my favorite books, because it's filled with all kinds of promises. Naomi and her husband and her two boys, as you heard last week, are living in Bethlehem. Bethlehem, the name of Bethlehem means the house of bread. And there is no bread for Naomi and her family. In the house of bread, there's no bread. Within her community, no one's being generous to them. And so in order to find food, in order to find a way forward, a future, Naomi and her family has to move to a foreign country. They go to a country named Moab. Not a city in Utah. Well, it is a city in Utah, but they go to a foreign country. They can't get help in their own country, so they go to a foreign country, and some people in Moab welcome them in. They spend 10 years. They spend 10 years in Moab. They find generosity as aliens and as immigrants in a new land. The Moabites open up to Naomi and her family. They provide for them 10 years. They provide work. They provide a way forward. Not only that, but they provide wives for Naomi's boys. And these wives have names, Orpah and Ruth. Tragedy strikes in Naomi's family. Naomi loses her husband. He dies. And then the two boys die. So now what we have in that period of time in history, three of the most vulnerable people in that part of the world, and that's widows. One of the reasons why God has a special care for widows, orphans, and aliens in the midst of people. So these three widows, vulnerable. Naomi goes, how am I going to make this happen? How are we going to move forward? We're not going to be able to move forward. So Naomi says to Orpah and Ruth, I'm going to go back home. I'm going to go back to Bethlehem. I'm going to go back to the house of bread, hoping that they will take me back. Hoping that my family will care for me. Because that's the way it worked in a patriarchal system. Will my family take me back? And Orpah and Ruth, as good daughters-in-law do, they say, we're going to go with you. We're going to go with you. You're not going to go alone. And Naomi says, you can't come with me. It'll be lucky if they take me in. It'll be much harder to take three widows in. Who's going to care for us? Who's going to provide for us? So Naomi says, no, go back to your families. They'll take you back. And Orpah says, okay, I'll go. But Ruth doesn't. And Ruth makes one of the most beautiful promises of all time. Ruth says, I will go where you go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. And wherever you die and they bury you, I will be buried next to you when I die. And even after death, I will be with you. A promise. And we read that promise in the book of Ruth, and we stop there. But we have to realize that these are two of the most vulnerable people in that part of the world and that time of history. And they have to leave Moab and they have to go all the way back to Bethlehem. And in their way is the Dead Sea. They're going to have to go around death to find life. And it's not a 30-minute walk. It's not an afternoon walk. It takes 8 to 10 days over rugged terrain. And we can imagine that it's probably a road that's been traveled. So there's other people on this road. And if there are other people on this road, you can imagine that not all of them have good intentions. Not all of them are thinking good thoughts. These two vulnerable women are walking 8 to 10 days. They have to sleep outside. Bandits, wild animals, the weather. We hear that promise from Ruth and we think, awesome, amazing. Everything is going to be cool. But that's just the beginning. Once you make that promise, the hard part begins. I stood up here 26 years ago, and I looked at now my wife, and I made promises. And that promise came with a hope too. Right? And we've never had problems since then. I'm that awesome. The real work started after the promise. The real work started after the promise. And that's what happens. Ruth makes this beautiful promise, but the work of keeping that promise is going to be hard. It has a hope to attach to it. Fast forward generations, and we have Jesus talking to his disciples and talking to us today. And Jesus says, I want you to do something. I want you to make a promise. I want you to take up your cross and follow me. Now, I'm not comparing marriage to a cross. But I want you to take up your cross and follow me. Now, the interesting thing about that is that sometimes we think that's too much of a leap for us. But if we listen to the language, Jesus is saying, take up your cross. Jesus isn't asking you to take up his cross or your neighbor's cross or your family's cross or Mother Teresa's cross or anybody else's cross. Jesus says, take up your cross. What kind of a promise can you make? That comes with a hope to attach to it, of course. But what kind of a difference can you make in this world? Because it's about giving of ourselves. It's about sacrificing. That's what a cross is. It's an honor. It's not a burden. Think about this. The Son of God is asking us to connect into this world by being the hands and feet of God in this world. It is an honor. It is a privilege. Yes, certainly it can feel like a burden at times because we have time and resources and we have all kinds of things that we want to do. And when we make a promise, we have to sacrifice things. But we get to do this. That's you and I. It's a privilege. What is your cross? Years ago, there's a group here at Prince of Peace started connecting in with Echo Park Elementary School. Tutors, helping kids learn how to read better. And one of the groups was called Math Masters. Anybody remember Math Masters? Yeah. And my son was a part of the Math Masters group as a kiddo. There were adults from this congregation that said, we're going to take our time, our resources, our skills, and we're going to go over and we're going to help kids fall in love with math. And they did it. And my son loves math. He got a double major, physics and math from St. Olaf, and now he's in his grad school for data science. I don't know where this kid got his stuff from. My wife and I, we look at amazement all the time going, that brain is amazing. But part of his journey was because people felt the need to give of their time and their resources to help somebody else. See, Jesus says, if you want to save your life, if you want to keep everything to you, you're going to lose it. But if you're willing to give yourself away, you're going to gain everything. That's what it means for us to make a promise. 66 years ago, there was a group of people in Burnsville, Minnesota, that decided that they were going to make a promise. And that promise became Prince of Peace Lutheran Church. And that promise was not just for them, but for the generations and the generations and the generations that came after. And you and I are in this space right now because people have been keeping that promise over the years. And now we have the privilege to continue that promise, to continue to live into that promise. 2 years ago, we came before the congregation with an idea that we were not going to just sit back and wait for the church to die. Our young people in their 30s, 40s, 30s, 20s, they've been walking away from organized religion and church for a long time. You may know that might be some of your kids or some of your grandkids or some of your friends. They're not walking away from God. They're not walking away from spirituality, but they haven't found this kind of community to be compelling for them. They'd rather be home watching the Vikings right now. Right? And we came to them and said, we came to the congregation and said, we don't want to just sit by. We want to live into the promise. We hope to. We want to live into the promise. And we had an idea, a crazy idea of creating a new staff position, a pastor of engagement. And we said, the only way we're going to be able to do this is if you become more generous and if you catch the imagination of a whole nother generation that can be part of this community. And you said yes. And it took us a while. The call committee that was a part of that, how long did you guys go? Like 5 years? Felt like 5 years. Took them about a year to find this person that God has called for us. I see he's laughing and smiling back there. You were part of that. Go to Nebraska, 1 point. And they found him. His name is Pastor Rory. And Pastor Rory is doing all kinds of interesting things, things that I would never imagine doing myself. Trail church, going on a hike, I'm not doing that. Because once you get to where you're going, you got to come back. There's not like a restaurant or a gift shop at the end of that trail. You got to just walk back. But he's being really creative. And he's only been here 3 months. Because of your generosity. So whenever you give, we want to be able to share with you what's going on. So you don't wonder, like, how's it going? What are they doing with our offerings and our resources? So we want to show you this video.
I feel like my role was created to reach out and engage people. They had done a demographic study of who lives within a
9-minute
drive of Prince of Peace's campus.
And the largest demographic group, just under 50%, are millennials and Gen Z.
Also 60% unaffiliated with any sort of faith community. It's developing a new kind of ministry here, a ministry that hasn't been done in this sort of targeted way before. What's exciting to me is just engaging people in community and then finding the Spirit of God in any sort of community we can build that are structured a bit differently than what we traditionally think of when we think of church. Instead, see a community of faith as something that is a holistic place for people's primary experience of that community is not one of hurt, but one of healing. Why is it important to engage people that might never set foot in the building? Because they're people. And that's growing the church. We're trying some things out. So we've got a couple different things that we're doing in series. One is Trail Church, where we are engaging God out on the trail.
I was really glad to just have this on my calendar and know that I was going to have some time in God's natural world this week. Trail Church is a great way to, in small chunks, to unplug for an hour or so.
Another one that we're launching is Beer Church, which is a fun little mashup of words that we don't usually put together. We're partnering with Ineffable Brewing Company here in Burnsville to host an event that we hope is ultimately a space for fun, for non-judgmental conversations around spirituality and faith and issues that are relevant. I think in 1 year, what I hope is through our little experiments or trial runs of things, that there will be some things that we'll dive into and invest in and keep going, and that those will be sustained by people that are participating in those. It can't just be Rory that leads this ministry here at Prince of Peace. I need people to come alongside and try doing this with me. Finding those kind of people to walk with, to journey with, that's going to be what determines the success of the things that I do, I think.
Yeah, he's been here for 3 months, and he's already doing all kinds of stuff. He's a cool dude. I'd love for you, if you see him, to connect with him and say hi and see how you could be involved. Because of your generosity, we are able to keep a promise that was made 66 years ago. We're standing on the shoulders of people that came before us. We're standing on the shoulders of pastors and staff. But we're also standing on the shoulders of those charter members who got together and said, we're going to do this thing. And over the years, through God's help and the power of the Holy Spirit, Prince of Peace has been a part of sharing the gospel with literally tens of thousands of people. That might even be too low of an estimate. And we're at that moment right now where we're going to continue that. So we're moving into our capital campaign. And over the next couple of weeks, you'll begin to hear more and more about what all this is about. But there's 3 points to this capital campaign. One is that we want to preserve what we have. When I say the word pride, it's not like we're taking pride like, look at us, look how cool we are. It's about taking pride in what the power of the Holy Spirit has done in this world through this ministry called Prince of Peace. It has to have flesh and bones put to it, not just words, flesh and bones. And so this morning, we have a tote bag that we want to give to every single person. And if you have a friend that is not able to come to the next couple of weeks, bring one to them. This is a tote bag. And I would love for you to use this when you go to the Targets and the Hy-Vees and the Cubs and the Lunds and the Aldis. Did I miss anybody? You know, I mean, and then maybe someone will go to you and go, what is that? And then you get to be an evangelist. You never thought you were. You get to go, this is my church. But there's a group of people, a couple committees that are meeting, all volunteers. And they decided that they wanted to fill this bag with a couple different items. Items that are really creative that I wouldn't have thought about. And so to remind us of the opportunity to preserve, which is basically to put a new roof on our leaky sanctuary, is a small jar of preserves. Strawberry. Sorry, grape lovers. You get strawberry. And it's from Essex, England. That's pretty cool. And then as we think about the next phases of our life together, we want to pay down our debt. We really should not be paying interest on a principal when your giving should go right to ministry. Should go right to ministry. So let's just get rid of that. Let's pay that off. Let's get rid of it so that we can feed more people, we can clothe more people, we can give more people. What if we had a free VBS? For the whole community. Can you imagine 1,200 to 2,000 kids on our campus? Where's our children's ministry people? They're freaking out right now. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine giving these kids t-shirts and they go to school wearing their t-shirts and all of a sudden other kids in their elementary schools are going, where'd you get that cool t-shirt? My church. My church. So we want to be open to all kinds of ideas. And so in your bag, you can get a bottle opener. You can put it on your keychain. And then plant. We want to be here for the next generations. We want to live in to the promise that was made 66 years ago. That's the promise that we're a part of now. And so each one of you is going to get a plant. It's called a succulent. I've never heard of that word before until like a week ago. And now I know everything about it. Put this someplace in your home that you will be remembered and remind you about what we're doing here and what you're doing here at Prince of Peace. And then just the last couple of things. We have a book for you that's all about stories. It's a book about generosity. We asked for stories and we got stories. Stories of generosity that some are not connected to Prince of Peace, some are deeply connected to Prince of Peace. And there's names in here. And one name in particular I want to lift up is a name called Anonymous. And there's a lot of Anonymous in here. Not everybody wants their name, but please take this home and read it. Be inspired by other people's feeling of generosity happening to them and their own generosity to others. Then a couple other things we want to share with you here as well. We're not asking for contributions in a number right now from anybody. There'll be time for that, right, Keenan? There'll be time for that down the road. But we want you to pray. And so we have a campaign prayer. It's a card. Please put this someplace in your house where you can read through it. And you can pray about it. You can pray how God is leading you to be a part of this promise that we are continuing to live into. We invite you to be in prayer with that. Also, the Texas Longhorns need your prayers. Sorry, Randy, I had to put that in there. I am rambling. I know I am. Yeah. And then the last and really important thing, we have an invitation for you guys. It's a card. It's in the envelope. It's an invitation to a dinner that's going to happen right in this space on November 2nd at 5:30, where we're going to try to gather all of us together. We're hoping for a couple thousand people in this room. I know it's weird to try to put that out there and only 10 people show up, but we really want everybody to come. To be excited, to be part of this community. And you can RSVP through the QR code or through our website. We want to get a general idea how much food we need to be able to provide. This is something we get to do. We don't have to do it. This is something we get to do. It's an honor. It's a privilege. We get to do stuff that nobody else gets to do in this world. Thank you. Thank you for all that you do now and for all that God is calling to do with us in the future. So now.